What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, a more pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is July 4th. Happy July 4th, everybody. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Eury Pérez. Beware of the Eury of a patient manager. Beware of the fury of a patient a man is a very famous quote. And this was all the patience paying off. It was four games of Eury Pérez just not performing up to standards. And the thing is, in 2023, Eury showcased a stud in the making. I remember seeing some dynasty rankings having Eury inside their top 10 entering 2024 as starting pitchers. And so to write him off completely just didn't feel right for a bit. However, he wasn't really performing at a level that made you feel confident week to week. However, this one against the Twins, oh my gosh, six innings, zero runs, one hit, one walk, and seven strikeouts. A golden goal, 20 whiffs, 39% CSW for a win, 80 pitches. So it's not like he's getting pushed like 95 or something like that, but 80 pitches for a win. We're really cool with that. There are some weird things about this. I mean, one, the four-seamer performed so well, 13 over 46 with 50% CSW, 97 to 98 miles per hour, a flatter attack angle, 1.3 than we've normally seen, and 18 inches of vert as opposed to like the 17. All of this is really good, right? I also think that the locations that Eury had were generally very good for him. And why I'm saying it like that is because I don't think he was actually locating it exactly as he wanted to the entire time. A lot of these four-seamers or right-handers that got whiffs were along the inside edge, more so than the glove was or what his intention was. And also against lefties, I don't love the fact that he's not really super focused on going high and middle. There were some times that he certainly did it and executed it, and that's awesome. But there were many that were a bit too low, and he's not trying to do that away and down and middle, and that's not really ideal, or sometimes the middle of the plate or so. And it worked a lot. I mean, it was just still overpowering, and he got away with it, and you can do that when you throw 97, 98, right? It is something, though, that I think I've seen in the previous starts from Eury, and he didn't get the same kind of results. And this wasn't so much different from it on the four-seamer, that he deserved it so much more than previously. However, what we have seen in these starts from Eury Pérez has been the development of his secondaries. The curveball has taken some steps forward in a start or two. There has been a slider that then showed up in his previous one. And in this one, the slider just had a 54% strike rate. The locations to right-handers were not the down and away bucket that you want to see, the glob there. It was some of them did get around there, and then most of them were kind of just over the plate, and they worked. They were, called strikes and whatnot here. There were some that were down and into lefties too that were really cool, but it's not really the big slider feel that we want to see. And he did actually get some strikeouts with the pitch, of course, all that kind of stuff, but it's not really like, oh my gosh, his slider's woken up. It's not like it's Grant Holmes or Spencer Strider, those kinds of sliders, right? And the curveball against the against left-handers was fine. It really wasn't much of anything. Six total thrown between the curve and the changeups. I believe it was four curves and two changeups. But this really was a four-seamer slider game, and it wasn't the surgical domination. But it is a showcase of like, look, his stuff is just clearly good enough that he can go 20 whiffs and 39% CSW against a much improved Twins offense. So yeah, we're excited about this. He goes into Cincy and Baltimore for his next two starts in a two-step before the All-Star break. I'll say this, I don't think Eury's going to be going four innings a ton, right? I think the four-seamer is a very, very good pitch, and I hope that he is able to be more consistent with it in time. The slider and the curve should get better in time too. We're going to see some more stumbles when it comes to those pitches, and the changeup is just never going to be a thing, at least this season. I think he's going to have to do a real revamp with it and work on it over the offseason to get to a place that he likes. It needs to be different than what he is. He just has no feel for it. But, I mean, he should be a very productive starting pitcher. The four-seamer is a very legitimate one. It gets a lot of surprise rise out of it, and as long as he's throwing it not low, that should be very good. Jose Soriano, speaking of good fastballs, his sinker was back in business. Last time out, we didn't see the sinker looking good. The curveball wasn't very good. Yeah, this was a 55% CSW on 33 curveballs and 78% strikes in the sinker. Thus, against Atlanta, he got a win. 7 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. The slider wasn't really touched. Sorry, buddy, you didn't really get invited to the party. He does get the Rangers next, and I imagine that if Soriano needs the slider, he'll throw more of it, but he didn't here, so that's really cool, and the Rangers aren't a good offense, so we're cool with this. Cade Horton had his best line of his career. This was against the Guardians, 7 innings of 0 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Got 12 whiffs and a 32% CSW as well. And the criticisms I've had of Cade Horton are pretty simple. The four-seamer command, just not there. It's not really demolishing batters by jamming them inside or laying down the foundation for his secondaries to go on top of. And that really wasn't much different here. A lot of lefties, of course, with the Guardians, and he threw a ton of cut fastballs over the plate that they just didn't take advantage of. It's not really that special. The curve and slider also haven't been this big whiff pitch for him. While then I was waiting for more development with the changeup and really hoping that that would take shape. So what's really good about this one is that the changeup was brilliant down and away from lefties. 28% of the time, 73% strikes with 8 whiffs on 22 thrown is so good. He didn't have to have the sweeper and the curve that much, with the four-seamer landing mostly above the changeup. It still wasn't like really that great location, as I was mentioning before. I will say that the curve is really a gyro slider. A lot of it was very close to 0-0 movement. It's like -2, -3 or something. And it's at 83, 84, which makes me think of this kind of no man's land of, we like hard throwing curves, but ones that actually have proper drop to it, like 6 inches of drop. And so -6 or so, and maybe some sweep to it. So seeing kind of like a gyro slider 83, 84 makes me understand a little bit more of why it's not really getting so many whiffs. And the sweeper is really, you take that and just kind of move it towards horizontal. So it's like a -6 or so horizontal, but at zero drop. And the whole circle of range for Cade Horton, it's all actually a very close, smaller circle. If you just do one large one of all the pitches in the strike zone plot, then you normally see of like Landon Roop, who has 18 inches of sink and then 18 inches of sweep, right? Or sorry, 18 inches of run on his sinker and then 18 inches of sweep on his breaker, right? It's not that large of a range around everything. So it makes a lot more sense that Cade Horton is not this massive strikeout guy, because he's just not getting that much movement separation, and he's going to rely more on deception of location and speeds than anything else. So it does, to me, showcase the lower ceiling for Cade Horton moving forward. It seems very negative what I'm saying about this one. He did have a 19% non-competitive rate on that four-seamer, which is like, whoa, hold on a second. That's supposed to be like your commanded in the zone pitch, and that should be like an 8%, 5% or so, right? That's not very good. You got to get that in check. But having this extra weapon of changeups against lefties, I hope that sticks around. If it is, then I feel much better about Cade Horton, because, well, yeah, you have something else to do instead of four-seamers and breaking balls. That was a long time about Cade Horton, but I feel like that was the most interesting start of yesterday. There's Joey Cantillo, though, too, who stepped in because Luis Ortiz has, a problem on his hands, and that is he flagged 2 bets by throwing first pitch balls to start innings, and he's in under investigation now. We're going to see how that works. Joey Cantillo is now stepping into the rotation in his spot, and it's 3.1 innings of 0 runs, 2 hits, 3 walks, and 5 Ks in 68 pitches yesterday against the Cubs. And if you don't remember Joey Cantillo, the really interesting thing about him is that he has absurd extension. It was 7.6 feet on his four-seamer. Yeah, it's like 91, 92. You know, so it's not, it's kind of like Bailey Ober in this way of low velocity, great extension. And the thing about Cantillo, though, like Ober, he has a really good changeup, but Ober is a righty and Cantillo is a lefty. And he also does have some better breaking stuff. The curve and the slider, I think, are actually pretty decent with Joey Cantillo, especially against lefties. Like, he takes them down better than Ober does righties with his breaker. So there is promise here. The problem here is that also the commando wasn't Bailey Oberizzi style, like good Ober of four seamers up, changeups down kind of thing, right? So I'm very curious about Cantillo. We saw him have those good stretches last season, and I'm a huge fan of good extension, especially with his fastball changeup as a lefty. We've seen lefties succeed with slower velocity a bit. It is interesting. I would not count out Cantillo if he is in this rotation moving forward, which very well could be the case. I was actually really surprised it's taking so long for Cantillo to return, as he had success last year. And it does seem like Ortiz is not going to just return next week or something. So, yeah, Joey Cantillo is someone you might want for the second half, especially in your deeper leagues. He has a single stream against the Astros. It is a right-handed lineup, but only at 68 pitches means that, like, maybe he's going to be under 80 in that one, which means he has to be very efficient. He wasn't really in this one. 3.1 innings for 68 pitches is not what you want. And I think I would be more interested in the White Sox than the one after. But if you have to go both, it's a two-step. I think you actually can go for it. Let's see what happens in your 15-teamers. We have other guys to talk about. Logan Evans is now starting. We have Seth Lugo and Aaron Civale. Dustin May with an interesting one. Robbie, oh boy. We've got some fun ones to talk about, and we're talking about all of them after this break. Logan Evans against the Royals stepped up because Hancock got moved to AAA. They're like, we're done with this. We're going to give Logan Evans a chance. 5.2 innings of 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 3 Ks. Props to him. You get a gold star because I expected nothing out of this, especially just coming up out of nowhere. Even though it was against the Royals in the T, I get it, but I just don't really think he's that good. And he throws 87, 88 mile per hour, quote unquote, cutters, which are really sliders because they are gyro. They are 0-0. And he throws them 30% of the time. So he's going dancing with the disco with that and 27% sweepers, which honestly, you know, we see this a lot of if you just want to survive in the majors, throw decent to, you know, like slightly above average sliders 40% of the time, right? If you just do that, you can get through games a lot. Zach Littell's doing that. I think Jessica Fani's an old good example. Miles Michaelis has done that. I mean, so many guys have really done this in the past, like Griffin Canning. We've seen it. And Logan Evans is kind of doing that. 27% sinkers and a handful of like forgettable things underneath. I don't know if I love the sweeper feel. And the 92 mile per hour sinker is not a good sinker. It's not, I mean, I think I saw a better one before from Evans, but this was like a sub 15 inch ride sinker run rather. So I want to see that like 17 or so and getting that inside. I don't think this is really something to chase. If he does dancing with the disco and throwing all those sliders all the time, it can work out like this in the future if he gets a good matchup. You have Seth Lugo on the other side, 6.1 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 7 Ks. Great to see once again Seth Lugo go at least 7 Ks. I believe that's 4 straight games after I said he's not getting strikeouts like the other guys. So thank you so much. 34% usage curveballs. Those curveballs are kind of split. He has one that's more sweeper than the other. And that's fine with me. I don't really care. So fun stuff there from Seth Lugo. You have Aaron Civale against the Dodgers. Could have given him a gold star. 5 innings of 200 runs, right? Well, 1.4 whip. So 5 hits, 2 walks, and just 4 strikeouts, and he got a loss. And it's not really anything you'd want to chase anyway. And he did this, though, with 28% fastballs. And why does that matter? Because Aaron Civale is at his best when he throws 70% secondaries. And when he's cutters, and it's cutters, and it's curveballs, and maybe some splitters, or some sliders, all the good stuff, all those secondaries. Awesome. I'm happy that Civale did that. And I gotta say, it's always really fun to see strange approaches or just things you don't really see every day. And I think this is the first game I've ever seen where, at least this season, I'll say it that way, that I saw cutters and sinkers exclusively thrown to right-handers. So all the ones that he threw to right-handers, which was like, I want to say 80% of the pitches he threw to right-handers. I don't think a single one was not high lock. That is in the upper third of the zone or higher. And a lot of them were just pretty much were in the zone. In the upper third. And they threw eight total pitches that were not upstairs against right-handers, and they were all sliders and curveballs. Now, they weren't amazing ones, but the fact that he just nailed sinkers and cutters upstairs, Cannibal McSanchez style, to right-handers is really cool. I gotta say, I love things like that, where it's like, I have an approach I'm gonna stick to and I'm gonna nail it, you know? You can say what you want about if it's a good one or not. I think it actually is for what Civale does. Maybe you should throw more sliders than that. But that's really, really cool. So props to him for that. And then it's just about like, cool, how are you going to get out lefties? We'll see. Dustin May on the other side of this, because remember, Savali is a White Sox now. 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts against the White Sox. And the thing is, entering the 8th inning, well, actually, I should say this, through 7 frames, Dustin May had 0 earned runs. He had 3 hits and 0 walks, right? And I apologize for that. It was 2 hits, 1 walk through 7 innings, which is nuts. He had an unbelievable game. It's 9 strikeouts. And then he allows a single and then a 2-run shot on a 94-mile-per-hour sinker down in middle to a lefty. Bam, done. And he was upset. I mean, the way he reacted to, he kind of like swatted at his face. He said something that was very much not pitcherless language. And he swatted his face like it was chasing away a bug after. Oh my gosh. You can absolutely blame it on the White Sox that May did well here. However, he was a tick up on his sinker. Like it was 95.5, right? 95.5, so 95.96 as opposed to 94.95, which is good. We haven't seen that for ages. He also had a 78% strike rate, 9 cutters, so 7-for-9 on that. If I'm doing the correct math, I believe I am. 7, yeah, that's just 7 repeating. Whenever you have something over 9, it's just the same number repeating. Okay. And then, so that's fine. The 4-seamer was utilized well in the upper half and utilized for strikeouts. So he actually got 4 of them on that 6 whiffs on 18 thrown. That's cool. The sweeper was generally low too. It wasn't just the scatter plot that I normally see of him just wildly throwing this lefties. He actually did locate them well. So this was Dustin May's best performance of the year. Even against the White Sox, he did earn this. That said, it could be a Dennis. If you know 30 Rock, Dennis shows up and doesn't stick around for long. So be careful about this one. He gets the Brewers next. It feels like you can go for it. And of course, it's always helpful that he's on the Dodgers. So it's a good defense and good offense, good run support, good win chance, etc. They want him to go 6 innings. But yeah, it could be more of the same of terrible whip and bad sinkers and sweepers, so be careful. Speaking of going the distance, though, and having great starts and getting them ruined a little bit later, we have Robbie Ray, who had 1 earned run going into the 9th and allowed a solo shot and then another hit, and it was really annoying. And then I believe he walked a batter, so he had like 2 hits going into, or like 1 hit, I think it was, entering the 9th inning. And no, it was a double and a solo shot previously. So it was, and then 1 hit and 1 walk. So he had a walk and he had a home run. There we go. I'm so sorry. I'm just being ridiculous. Long story short, Robbie Ray killed it. 102 pitches. It was an awesome final at bat. And yeah, it was amazing. And what's really cool too is that Robbie Ray did this 9 innings, 2 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks, 14 whiffs, 30% saves. That we got the win against the Diamondbacks. He gets aces, gonna ace again, because I told him, hey, look, if you do well against the White Sox and you kill against and you do great against the Diamondbacks, you're in. He really showcased, yes, he's in. And you know, it's kind of funny looking back at it. After his first 4 games, when I was getting all of the heat for having Robbie Ray ranked highly, and I still kept him at top 30, I think, at that time. Everyone goes, you're crazy, which is fine. That happens all the time. Sometimes I am crazy. But Robbie Ray has like a 2-3 ERA and a 1 whip with a 29% K rate or something like that. I think it's like a 0.8 whip or something. I don't know. It's pretty great. So the fact that I took away aces gonna ace for a moment, I kind of regret, but at the same time, that was really boosted by that 6 starts or so that were so good, and then he was worse for the last 3. Really kind of tenuous of like, hey, are you actually doing good things? And guess what? Sub 40% 4-seamers, right? Those weird starts were a bit because Robbie Ray did not trust his secondaries very much. And this one wasn't really with the changeup working. It was mostly the slider, Blake Snell blueprint all the way through against these right-handers that Arizona threw at him. Awesome stuff. Like, truly fantastic, and I'm just happy for him. Robbie Ray, I'll listen to your grunts every night as they put me to sleep soundly, as I feel so secure, like a warm blanket. David Peterson against the Brewers got the win. 6.2 innings of 1 earned run, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Not the best game that I've seen from Peterson, but it was more of a dedicated approach than I have seen lately from him. It's not the best one. He's not nailing everything. He has a little bit too many mistakes with his 4-seamer and sinker out of the zone. And he like comes back into it. It's a bit effectively wild. But he does get decent pitch separation. That is with his 4-seamer and sinker generally upstairs. You have the curves and sliders and changeups generally down, mostly against right-handers. And that's fine. So he gets the Orioles next. I'm fine with it. I am not going out of my way. I'm not saying that like Peterson is a Holly right now. I'm kind of going to say he's a Toby. And I think that should be okay. But I think he is a whip killer. And it's something that I wasn't really taking into account because he does just kind of lose batters and fails to execute all of his pitches to push up that walk rate. You have Brandon Pfaadt against the Giants. 6 innings, 4 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts, which is cool. The sweeper was barely touched, and it's really weird and has less sweep. And that's supposed to be the good thing from Brandon Pfaadt. But now he's also throwing sinkers dramatically down and inside to right-handers, which I guess can work, but also is kind of weird. You want to get that higher up, believe it or not. You don't want it to be down and in. You want it to be middle and in, because when the bat path makes it so that down and in is where the barrel is, and middle and in is harder to get to the barrel of the bat for a lot of guys, so you actually get closer to the handle that way. I don't really love this. The sweeper did get 3 of the strikeouts in the 9 that he threw. He kind of threw some cutters. He threw 6 of them to lefties, 1 to right-handers, and it was fine. He did have some decent curveballs and changeups down to lefties, but they weren't... The changeup wasn't away. The curveball had moments. It was fine. I'm like, all right. This is the Giants, keep in mind, too. So the 8 strikeouts to me, I'm going to say a little bit of blame on the Giants on that. But I'm not in on Pfaadt right now. Jake Irvin against the Tigers had a good game. Got the win. 6 innings, 3 runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. He was really good against the lefties. The Blake Snell blueprint was so good of high four-seamers and low curveballs. He allowed just 1 hit on 59 pitches to lefties. That is awesome. Now, against righties, the fastball was still high. It was kind of in high lock for the most part, but it wasn't out of the zone up. It wasn't really tempting the top of the zone. And there just wasn't much else to throw with it. The curveball, for some reason, just wasn't really doing much to it. The slider was fine. It wasn't like it wasn't effective, but why not just throw the curveball? You have a better curveball. Just throw that. He only had a 14% CSW on the four-seamer. He kept throwing that instead. I'm like, just throw more sliders then, or more curves. I don't know. It seems a little weird. So Irvin, I do wonder, is like, well, you are feeling the location of your 7 feet extension four-seamer. You have a good feel for the curveball against lefties. Slider ain't so bad. Like, you can see how this worked out for 1 whip and 4 Ks in 6 innings with a win and a poor quality start, right? 3 earned runs. Like, I can see how that worked out against a good offense, and this is the Cardinals who are not as good. And his lefties too, which means that the curveball four-seamer BSB they just did could work again. I don't know. Not the worst thing ever in a deep league. I'm not saying that he's in his groove, but don't overlook it if you're looking for a start. Kyle Freeland against the Astros. 6 innings, 3 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Yeah, it's a poor quality start in Coors, but if you're in a normal league, then like you hate this, and it's the Astros. Like, yeah. Okay, Kyle Freeland. Chris Bassett against the Yankees got the win. 5.2 innings of 3 runs, but 8 hits and 3 walks. Oh my gosh. Very, very, very poor quality start. Just 1 out away from that, really. And a dusty donut as you got your 9 strikeouts and your win, but bad ratios. And I will say at least that the curveball did show up. And the curveball has been a problem for him. Where the curve wasn't a strike pitch a lot before, it was here. He did throw a lot of four-seamers that were not competitive. I'm talking 27% on 22 four-seamers. Like, that is a quarter of those are just way out of the zone, right? That's 5 of those of 22 are just like, nope, no thank you. Actually, 6 of them, rather. And 41% strikes. Like, why are you throwing your four-seamer this much? And he did try to use it as a strike pitch. A strikeout pitch upstairs, and I get that. But, like, 22 times? It's not enough for me for Bassett, right? Sinkers, curves, and cutters are generally what he's supposed to be doing. And if the curveball is getting strikes, cool. If the sinker and the cutter are also well located, then you should have a good game. I don't know why he went so much with the four-seamer against the Yankees, but he did. He got a win, I guess. 113 pitches needed for 5.2 innings also. It's just, I don't want to touch Bassett. The ratios are just too much. Jose Quintana against the Mets. I gotta say, much better than I expected. 5.1 innings of 300 runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, and 3 Ks. He allowed just 1 run through 5 with Koufax abandoning him in the 6 for 3 singles that led to 2 runs, right? He allowed 1 of them, then he got an inherited run after when he got pulled. The changeup reminded me of the old school Jimmy Key. And I think about this one all the time, and everyone goes, oh my gosh, you're thinking about that. I just do. It's just stuck in my head from a kid where I remember watching this game of Jimmy Key going against the Yankees where he just stayed away, away, away with all these changeups and just kept getting them to fish at it every time. And that's what Quintana did here against the Mets. It was a beautiful pitch. The curve and sinker weren't quite as good as we've seen. And if you were getting a good matchup, I would say, you know what, maybe you want to consider Quintana. But the thing is, he gets the Dodgers. And then after the break, if everything works out, the rotation that he misses the at Coors series and he's the one after, it's not for the Pirates, I'm sorry, for the Brewers, that would be the Dodgers. So yeah, you don't want to touch Quintana for like 3 weeks. Clark Schmidt left his game early with right forearm tightness. We're going to figure it out what it is today. I do not have high hopes here. It is that's all I can really say is just Clark Schmidt's very, very, very likely to hit the IL and be out for a significant amount of time. I don't know what it is. Could just be one of those forearm things that, say, Fried went through, but that was like 6 weeks to 2 months worth of waiting, you know? Could be one of those things. And at this point, it's July. If he comes back, it would be like September. And even then would be rehab starts and everything like that. It's not something to hold on to right now. You got to chase something else. Also, the Yankees are clearly going to be aggressive in this trade deadline. So I can't wait for Zach Gallen to be a Yankee. Zach Gallen's on every team. The Cubs, he's on the Mets, he's on the Yankees. I actually think it would be really cool if Zach Gallen was a Yankee. All right, David Festa against the Marlins. 6 innings, 4 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks. He got bamboozled for 3 runs in the first, including a 2-run shot. He settled down, and I'm thrilled to say that David Festa had 4 seamers up and changeups down to left-handers. That is really good. I've not seen him actually execute that Blake Snell blueprint. 8 over 34 whiffs between all those pitches. He had 4 strikeouts, and the slider was actually down in glove side of right-handers for 5 or 18 whiffs. And the sinker was the one that he paired it with. You're like, wait, what? Isn't he a four-seamer guy? I know, right? It is a 94-mile-per-hour sinker with terrible movement, but it had 77% strikes with a lot of called strikes and no hits on 13th thrown. So, wow, this is the first time I've seen Festa have like legitimate intent and execution. And the changeup had a 50%, or actually like more like a 47% strike rate, but he did get it low. And I think that's what matters to me more, is that he's actually doing that. And I'd rather have a 47% strike rate on this changeup, and it's all down and generally competitive, versus a 60-65% one where it's all floated and just scatter plot. That to me is just not really something that's sustainable. While this actually is like, cool, you are precise and you can make these smaller adjustments. So I'm excited for Festa to see how this develops. He gets the Cubs and then wouldn't possibly get the Dodgers in that first series back or so from the All-Star break. So, no thanks. I'm out on that for Festa. We'll wait into the second half. Bryce Elder, I was hoping it would be really good with the slider against right-handers as like a dark horse maybe. And no. 5 innings, 4 runs, 8 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks. The slider was okay. Just not like absurdly good. And the sinker was terrible. Right, like the slider was fine against righties, but he needed to be like the pitch. He needed to be like Holmes against the Rockies or something. It wasn't. Brandon Walter against the Rockies had cutters and 4 seamers that were pretty effective in cores. Now he did have a cutter that left the yard for 2 runs, and the sweeper though just didn't really get low. The changeup and sinker weren't much, or didn't really get focused, and were kind of punished when they were. And honestly, this wasn't the worst commanded thing. But the sweeper needs to be low. I mean, really, that's what it needs to be. And 5 innings, 5 runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, and 3 Ks in cores, fine. But you can also say that the air changes the movement of this, and it didn't really make sense to him. He didn't adjust enough. Okay, he goes and gets the Guardians next. He hosts them in Houston. Awesome. I think that should be pretty good for Brandon Walter. I'd be fine with that start. And Dedrick Ends. Oh, man. Yeah, he went against the Nationals. 4 innings of 7 runs, 8 hits, 2 walks, 3 Ks. And here's the thing. That start before, it was kind of cool with the changeup going down and away and 4 seamers upstairs with good vert in 94 or so. And he had a cutter that was a 31% strike rate. He allowed 5 runs on the board in the first. It was bamboozled there, 3-run shot included. He did have some really cool sinkers up and into left-handers. And even though some of those sinkers leaked down and they got hit, the ones that were actually, let's say like 80% of them or 70% of them were actually executed as he wanted to. And those were really cool. But here's the thing. SGL is on the IL. And unless the Tigers go off and get someone who they might, Ends is going to be in this rotation for the Tigers for the near future. I mean, Reese Olson obviously is also coming back. But I believe there is an opportunity here for Ends. It is Flaherty. It is Mize. It is Scooble. it is Olsen, and then it's Enns. Wow. I mean, unless I'm forgetting someone obvious here, but I think I nailed it. So I'm very curious to see how this works out for Dietrich Enns, but you don't need to go after this right now. The floor is too obvious. All right, that is it. I gave you guys a long one here on July 4th. My name is Nick Pollock. Enjoy the weekend, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.